development will come to order, and today is what day?
Well, let's see, let's look on the agenda. January 19th.
Okay, January 19th, 2005, and we have a good people today, and Duncan Weiss has been the chair of a progress board in the past. Now you are the director of Oregon Business Council, and I appreciate it. And then next is Bill Thorndike. I believe you are the chair of Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee. And then Joe Courtwright that has been Trade and Economic Committee Administrator in the past some time. Over how many years have you been serving as administrator?
From 1983 to 1995.
So that's quite a while. I believe you have institutional memory what is going on in our state in terms of the economy. I do appreciate it. So I do appreciate your leadership in the area of the economy, especially. And early December last year, we had a third annual the leadership conference held in the convention center, and I attended that meeting. I was deeply impressed the way that you gathered information and gave us the information. You set the tone what we should be in the future, and I do appreciate it. So. With that, who is going to start first?
Mr. Chair, let me introduce the other two, and I'm going to quickly turn it over to Bill and Joe. But again, my name is Duncan Wise, and president of the Oregon Business Council. The Oregon Business Council is an association of about 50 business executives from throughout Oregon, and our mission is to mobilize those executives to contribute to Oregon's quality of life and prosperity. Bill Thorndike is one of our directors from Medford Fabrication in Medford, and he has taken on a very challenging assignment to be the chair of the Oregon Business Plan Steering Committee, which is one of the major initiatives that we support at the Oregon Business Council. The steering committee itself is, the members are listed in the book we passed out earlier, just a few moments ago. The steering committee comprises a wide range of executives from throughout the state, some of whom are not members of OBC, I would point out. We have the chairs of the major business associations on the steering committee, along with other key business leaders around Oregon. The mission of the Oregon Business Plan is to provide a vision and strategy for the future of the economy and to set forth a set of initiatives that we've worked on with our business partners throughout the state that represents an agreement by the business community widely about what it is we need to work on to achieve a positive vision. So what we'd like to do today is Bill and Joe will review the plan. Bill is going to go through the whole architecture of it, and along the way, Joe, we're going to have a stop along the way where Joe is going to go into more depth on how the economy is performing now and what some of the key issues are, and then we'll complete the overview of the business plan. And then what we would like to do is walk through the business plan initiative guide, which you are the first to receive. This is the result of the summit. It's particularly designed for you to identify what's on the agenda from our perspective for the legislative session. Talk through the guide. There are probably parts of it that are going to be more interesting to this committee specifically, but we think it speaks to a lot of the different committees in the legislature, so we'd like to walk through that and then give you an offer of support and help, how we can help during the session to hopefully provide resources for you to make your job easier. So with that, I'd like to introduce Bill, our chair. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairman Lim and members of the committee. It's an honor to be here this morning to talk about the Oregon Business Plan. As Duncan mentioned that what I like to do is lay the framework, or if I want to, I guess more accurately, really talk about the recipe that's been involved in bringing the plan up to this point. And if you really go back to 2001, when our economy was in dire straits, I think that everyone was trying to figure out, well, how can we go about this in a more logical fashion and work towards a goal? And so basically what we did was talked about developing the shared vision for Oregon. And the shared vision is one that entrepreneurs, workers, policymakers, government throughout the state could agree upon. And I think that, again, we know that the main connection between public policy and the economy is really around jobs. And so we really did focus around the concept that if we had something we could really stretch out and reach for, it would be quality jobs for all Oregonians, which again takes into account all the different regions of our state, the types of economy we have, and again this goal that we have. Easily said, then you want to make sure that all the stakeholders are on board. And I think that what differentiates the Oregon business plan from anything that we've found anywhere in the United States was the willingness to sit down with all of the different stakeholders within the business community and figure out where we agreed on things and where we could bring forward a common agenda. And again, I think that you certainly needed the driving force of Duncan and the Oregon Business Council and Duncan and Joe during his research and stuff. But by really going out and extending a hand to some members of the business community that don't necessarily always agree with each other and say, well, what we keep hearing from the legislature is there any way to kind of get our hands around a common vision that the business community has? And so that's been part of our driving force. With that, then, of course, we've had the wonderful work, primarily and the driven work of Senator Wyden and his staff, Jason Don, who works for the senator. I would estimate probably spends over half of his time on the Oregon business plan. And Senator Wyden was convinced that, again, that there was enough common agenda that we could all work with. And, again, we have that rarity in the United States of our two U.S. senators who even talk to each other on a regular basis to move forward. And Senator Wyden basically then took it upon himself to help develop the leadership committee, which is kind of the counterpart to the steering committee, which is made up of the two senators along with the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate. And so, again, we have a better linkage to go forward. And, again, I think the great thing about Oregon and the business plan is that this wasn't a one-time event 3 years ago where we brought a few people together. When we first thought about it, we said maybe 200 or 300 people might show up. Mm-hmm. And again, because of the diligent work and interest in the economy, of course, we've had over 1,000 people at all of our different summits. So again, in this recipe then, is first of all, paying attention to the goal, talking about the vision, developing strategies to get there, and then the actual rubber on the road that we'll go over later in the initiatives. And again, the interesting thing with all of this is that this is a dynamic plan, that the goals that we came up with in 2002, while they're laudable, need to be fine-tuned and constantly reworked. And again, I think you'll see that today. Duncan and I and Jeff Tryons will actually be meeting with the Grantsmakers of Oregon on Friday, talking about what we call catalytic leadership and talking about really what the Oregon business plan has done, bringing the business community together with policymakers. We're going to be sitting down with the foundations of the state of Oregon, the philanthropic interests, and trying to figure out where do they fit in as stakeholders. Of course, you hear a lot right now about the Chalkboard Project, of course, in all of our communities. We see the tremendous results of the generosities of the different foundations, whether it's Meyer or Oregon Community Foundation, et cetera. And we're going to sit down and talk about that. And I think that as we were thinking about how we wanted to go about that, we asked, what was the key ingredient that allowed us to go forward with the Oregon business plan? And it really goes back to an earlier recession in the late 1980s, early 90s, and the creation of the Oregon Progress Board and this Oregon Shines vision. And so, again, going back to the early 90s, and I think in this case still very viable today, is this connection between the economy, community, and our environment that makes Oregon very, very special. And I think that, as we know, we have certainly paid attention to Oregon Shines. Oregon Progress Board continues to work today. And I think that to a certain degree, what we in the business community agreed to do was take on that first one, the economy, really make sure that we have a connection about how we in the business community interested in entrepreneurism, interested in productivity, interested in innovation, could connect that with, again, this concept of quality jobs. But never forgetting about how important that intersection is between the other two areas that, again, you have responsibility for, and we all do as Oregonians, healthy communities and a good environment. So, again, I think it's a good driving force that we use to always check ourselves against where we're going. So, again, back to where we were charged or took the charge was, again, around this concept that if we want to create quality jobs for all Oregonians, again, we need to bring in some different ingredients into that recipe. And what are those ingredients and how can we go forward? And so, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Joe to give you an update as to where we are in the Oregon economy today, how we do very, very well in good times and do very, very poorly in bad times. So, Joe.
Thank you, Bill. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Joe Courtwright. I'm an economist with Impresa in Portland, Oregon, and I work with the Oregon Business Council and on the Oregon Business Plan. It's a pleasure to be back in front of the Trade and Economic Development Committee. What I'd like to do is just give you a quick overview of a diagnostic, if you will, of how the Oregon economy is performing, and give you a framework for thinking about how we can reshape the Oregon economy along the lines that are envisioned by the Oregon Business Plan. And to do that, I'll start out by giving you sort of a framework for thinking about this very big, very complex system of the Oregon economy. And one of the really fundamental principles that we have in thinking about the economy, and this is reflected in the business plan, is the important role of what we call the traded sector of the economy. And, you know, if you're sort of an amateur economist, if you drive around from place to place, different communities in Oregon or, you know, around the country, for the most part, you'll notice that the businesses that you see in one place are the same set of businesses that you see everywhere. No matter where you go, you see restaurants, you see hospitals, you see banks, you see grocery stores, beauty salons, and the like. And that's certainly true that most businesses are similar from place to place. But pretty systematically, if you look really carefully at local economies, you'll discover that about a quarter to a third of the jobs in any economy really differ from place to place. And that quarter to a third of the jobs are, for the most part, in what we call the traded sector of the economy. And the traded sector of the economy is those businesses that sell their goods and services usually outside the community or in competition with other businesses around the country and increasingly around the world. The local sector of the economy, the banks, restaurants, grocery stores, and so on, really exist everywhere because they primarily serve the needs of local customers. That's why you find them in pretty much every community. And the critical role the traded sector is, the traded sector businesses, first of all, bring new money into the economy that gets re-spent in the local community in the form of wages that are paid to workers and then purchases in the local sector. And in contrast to the local sector, when the local sector really only grows as fast as the local economy grows because it's dependent on the population, the traded sector of the economy can either grow much more rapidly than the local economy or much more slowly, depending on how competitive it is with businesses in other parts of the country and other parts of the world. So in the long run, the health of our economy, the ability to grow our economy, depends critically on the health of those businesses in the traded sector, which is why we pay particular attention to them in the Oregon Business Plan. Now, when you look at the businesses that compose the traded sector in Oregon, as I said, they're not necessarily the same businesses you find everywhere. In fact, in Oregon, we have a very... missing a slide here. I'll just tell you about them. In Oregon, we have a distinctive set of businesses that we call industry clusters. And they're the kinds of businesses, again, that you don't find everywhere. And our principal industry clusters are a mix of the traditional industries that have always propelled the Oregon economy, things like the forest products industry, agriculture, fishing, and so on. And then and a mix of industries that emerged since then, in particular the high technology industry, metals, machinery, transportation equipment, and increasingly professional and creative services. So it's those industry clusters, those specializations in industries that are, again, selling their goods and services outside the state and outside the nation in many cases, that are bringing new money in and driving our economy.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Weiser, Thorndike, or Courtwright, thank you for being here. Could we possibly have our administrator make a copy of this presentation? I noticed you have one that we could have right now, because it's much more beneficial if we have that to make notes on.
We don't have copies of the presentation. We have one if you wanted to.
So maybe we could go. Get copies, and it's really important when y'all come to a committee that we have copies of the information. It's really hard to take that many good notes, and I'm a voracious note taker.
We'll certainly get you copies. I didn't know.
Can we go copy it now so we can have it?
Okay. It isn't quite.
Thank you very much.
I apologize. We made a few last minute changes, so some of the slides that you'll see here aren't reflected in the printed copy.
Better for us to have the testimony written. Thank you.
So that's the initial point here is, again, to think about the critical role of those businesses that are competing in national and international markets. If you look at the growth of the Oregon economy over the very long term, over the last three decades, there have been some ups and downs, but overall, we've expanded the Oregon economy. In fact, since the early 1970s, we more than doubled the size of the Oregon economy, from about 800,000 people at work in the early 1970s to about 1.6 million people going to work today. Now, we know that, you know, again, there have been recessions from time to time. The most recent one, obviously, occurred between 2001 and just last year. But overall, the trend has been pretty favorable for the Oregon economy as statewide, and we've generally outpaced the nation as a whole. But those numbers and that degree of change actually understates the transformation of the Oregon economy, because what we have today is not simply a larger version of the economy that we had two or three decades ago. We've fundamentally changed the economy. And the most emblematic change, really, has been the fact that the high technology industry, electronics, computers, instruments, software, has really taken the role of the leading industry in Oregon in terms of the gross value of output, the total number of people working, and the income generated for Oregonians. And that transformation actually happened really in the 1990s as the high tech industry grew very rapidly. And you can see that forest products employment has declined, but in the last few years it's actually stabilized relative to the nation. We know that over the last few years we've experienced a down economy in Oregon. We experienced this recession more severely than the nation as a whole. You can see the red line there indicates the performance of the nation. The blue bars represent Oregon's performance, and this is sort of year-over-year change, so it's a measure of what's happened in each 12-month period. And you can see we experienced roughly 3 years of declines in job growth from 2001 through early 2004. For each of the last 11 months, though, we've seen a year-over-year increase in employment. That means that the employment in January of 2005 is higher than the employment in January of 2004, and it's been that way really for the last 11 months. And you can see that we're actually outpacing the United States in terms of our current level of growth. So we're seeing a turnaround in the economy right now. And that's also reflected in the unemployment rate. The unemployment rate, which bounces around a lot from month to month, and these are not there's some noise in these numbers, but you can see that Oregon's unemployment rate, which peaked at about 8.5% in 2003, has come down steadily through most of 2004, although it remains persistently above the U.S. average. A snapshot for where we would be right now, if you sort of described the Oregon economy, is over the last 12 months, we are gaining employment. We've added about 35,000 jobs statewide in Oregon over the last 12-month period. That's about a 2% increase in employment. We actually, over the last 12 months, are the eighth fastest growing state in the United States in terms of job growth. which is definitely a very positive turnaround from 2001-2002. Our unemployment rate, as I noted, is still persistently above the national average. It ranks second highest in the nation, and there are a number of reasons for that, which I can touch on a little bit later. But we know that the level of job growth that we have has so far not been sufficient to really get us back towards the national average in unemployment. In retrospective, when we look back at the recession, it's very apparent that this was an event that affected us a lot more than it affected the nation as a whole. And it's really interesting to note that one of the reasons why we felt this recession particularly hard in Oregon is we basically dodged the last national recession. In 1990-91, when the U.S. experienced a fairly noticeable recession, growth in Oregon slowed down but actually didn't go negative. So we went for about 17 years, from 1973 through the end of 2000, without having an actual year-on-year decline in statewide employment. That was a very long and enviable record. And I think it came as a shock to a lot of people to realize that Oregon's economy could actually experience a recession. And clearly, in this recession, it was more severe than we experienced nationally. We had almost a 3% decline in employment from the peak to the valley of the recession, and that's not quite double the rate of decline nationally. Now, there were some very specific reasons for that. But before I talk about it, let me just describe, the nature of recessions. And as I mentioned, I think a lot of people got the perception, particularly in the late 1990s, that somehow we had repealed some basic laws of economics and that henceforth economies and stock markets would only go up and never down. Recessions are actually, they happen and are unavoidable, but they are really part of a natural process of transformation in the economy. And a number of things clearly happen in recessions, and this is true historically, it's true in this recession. Recessions, periods of weak business, tend to drive out the weakest firms. The least competitive firms are the ones that tend to get weeded out. One of the sayings in business is anybody can make money when times are good. The challenge is to make money when times are bad. And in essence, that's what we've seen. A lot of businesses that could make money when the economy was growing struggled. And overwhelmingly, the kinds of businesses that have been pushed out in this recession, this is true nationally, it's true in particular in Oregon, are businesses that are commodity producers. They're businesses that don't have specialized, differentiated products that consumers demand. We see that in a variety of markets, whether it's the computer chip market. Commodity memory chips are the ones that were producers in the United States in particular have lost market share, whether it's agricultural products like pears or wheat, or whether it's the aluminum market where U.S. producers have seen increased competition from commodity producers in Russia and China. And in particular, industries that are based solely on cheap labor. So if your only advantage in producing something is the fact that you have relatively inexpensive labor, particularly in the United States, it's hard to be competitive. But we've actually seen some gains, even during the recession. There have been businesses that have expanded, and the growth has particularly been in those industries where we have an advantage in terms of knowledge or quality or innovation, where we're creating distinctive new products or better quality products that compete well against other products that lack those qualities. And the interesting thing is when you look at the industries, the industry clusters that make up the Oregon economy and break it down industry cluster by industry cluster, Oregon firms have done at least as well as their counterparts nationally and in many cases better. And what this chart shows you is the change in employment in Oregon, and Oregon is shown as the blue bars, compared to the change in employment nationally in each of the major industry clusters that drive the Oregon economy. Now, first, the bad news. All those are pointing, to the left, which means they're negative. They're job losses. So all the industries that drove our economy were in a down mode during this recession, and that's unfortunate. But when you compare the red bar to the blue bar in each case, you'll see that the red bar is usually a little bit longer, in some cases much longer, or about the same as the blue bar, which means the Oregon industry performance was roughly comparable in things like wood products, transportation equipment, and Oregon did much better in things like computer products and food processing than did the nation as a whole. So, for example, in the computer industry in the United States, over this four-year period, About 25% of all the high-tech jobs in the country disappeared in the last 4 years. In Oregon, the decline was only half that. So our industries actually did much better than the same industry nationally. So the good news here is, despite the fact that all these industries were declining, is they were doing no worse, and in the most important case, the high-tech case, doing much better in Oregon. Now, the logical question is, if our industries are doing so much better than the same industries nationally, then why did this recession hit us so much harder than the nation as a whole? And the reason is because we have a much bigger manufacturing sector in Oregon than does the nation as a whole. And this chart basically shows you the share of gross output, the value of all the goods and services produced in Oregon and the United States. And the U.S. number is shown in the yellow line there, and you can see it sort of ebbing downward, smaller manufacturing sector in the United States. And Oregon's share of manufacturing is shown in that red line, which you can see is actually increasing. And manufacturing accounts for about a quarter of all the value of goods and services produced in Oregon and accounts for less than 15% of the value of goods and services produced in the United States. So we're about 60% more dependent on manufacturing than the nation as a whole. And we're particularly dependent on what are called durable goods manufacturing. And durable goods are just things that you wouldn't use up after you buy them. So, food products and most paper products, for example, are non-durable goods. Computers and automobiles and lumber are durable goods. And if you look at what drives the Oregon economy, and in particular what drove the Oregon economy during the 1990s, things like high-tech, metals, transportation equipment, those industries all make up a much bigger share of the Oregon economy and are much bigger drivers of Oregon economic growth than they were nationally. So the problem with Oregon's economy is not that individual Oregon businesses didn't do at least as well as the same kind of businesses nationally. It's that the businesses that we have everywhere experience, we are weighted towards, we have a bigger portfolio, if you will, in the industries that were most challenged, really, during this last recession. So I think the real question is, what will it take for our industry clusters, for the forest products industry, for the food processing industry, for the high-tech industry, and the metals and machinery and transportation industries to do to be successful? And one of the things that we've been able to do in the Oregon Business Plan is spend a lot of time talking to individual Oregon businesses in all of these industry clusters about the challenges they face and the opportunities that they see. And surprisingly, we heard a number of very similar themes arising in all of these industries, and it didn't matter whether it was a high-tech industry or a natural resource-based industry. We heard a very similar set of themes, and they told us that their success in the future depends on their ability to do at least these three things, and I'll highlight these, and I know Bill will talk about some others. But critically, on innovation, the ability to develop new products and better products and to become more efficient, the ability to attract and retain and develop talented workers, because that's the way you are able to innovate, is by having really good workers. And then finally, entrepreneurship, people creating new businesses that will build our industry clusters and in some cases create entirely new ones. So what we try to do in the business plan is, and I've tried to do today, is pull together some metrics of how we seem to be doing in these fundamental things that will drive our economy forward. It's hard to get an exact count of how many new ideas are being produced in Oregon and how good they are. One of the indicators we have, though, is how many things are getting patented by inventors and by companies in Oregon. And here the trend is unambiguous and very good. Oregonians are more innovative now than they have ever been, are producing more patentable ideas. This is across the industry spectrum, and it includes everything, from high-tech to sporting goods to wood products and so on. And you can see the volume of patenting in Oregon has more than doubled over the last decade and has continued to increase right through this recession. So we know that Oregon businesses are getting more innovative, and our share of total patenting in the United States is increasing, which means patenting is increasing faster in Oregon than it is in the rest of the country. So that's a favorable indicator. Another favorable indicator, although I don't think we often think about it, is the role that migration plays. And one of the really interesting things about Oregon is that even though we've had job losses in each of the last 3 years, people have continued to move to Oregon in about the same numbers, at about the same rate that they did even when our economy was doing well. The red line here shows you the net migration. That's the difference between the number of people moving into Oregon and the number of people moving out. You can see that it stayed in positive territory, even though those blue bars, the net change in employment from year to year, was negative in each of the last 3 years. And what's particularly important is our migration seems to be driven disproportionately by the migration of talented young people. Oregon ranks among the highest in the nation, in fact, fourth in the nation, in the net in-migration of single, college-educated, 25 to 39-year-old people. The Portland area ranks fourth in the nation in the percentage gain in college-educated young adults. So we know we're attracting a lot of very talented young people. And there's a downside and there's an upside to that. The downside is when people move here and we don't create jobs, the unemployment rate is higher than it would otherwise be. There are more people looking for jobs. So in essence, it's helping drive up our unemployment rate a bit. But I think if you take the long-term view, that net migration of talented people is very important to our state's economy for a number of reasons. First, those people as workers are, we know, are very important to our firms. And having our firms be able to easily attract and find very talented people is a positive indicator. It also means we're hanging on to people who are educated here. So don't assume that it's just about people moving from elsewhere, because we're also hanging on to a disproportionate share of our college graduates. The second thing is we know that people in this young adult age group, 25 to 34-year-olds, are among the most prolific entrepreneurs. So if we're thinking about who's going to create the next generation of Oregon businesses, having a net inflow of these people is particularly important. And then third, it's an important comparative advantage or a competitive advantage, because almost unnoticed, the number of young adults in the United States has been declining over the last decade. Today, there are about 4 million fewer 25 to 34-year-old young adults in the United States than there were a decade ago. Most metropolitan areas and most states have fewer young adults today than they did in 1990. Oregon is one of the places that has a bigger supply of young adults. And I look around the room here and I see a few baby boomers. As baby boomers start retiring and moving out of the labor force, having access to talented workers is going to be a huge comparative advantage. Now, I know it's hard when you have the second highest unemployment rate in the nation and you've had 3 years of declining employment to say, you know, it looks like we're headed for a labor shortage in the United States. But all the things that drove the growth of the labor force in the United States over the last 30 or 40 years are all coming to an end in the next decade. Baby boomers have been moving into the labor force over the last two or three decades. They're starting to move out. Women's labor force participation, which grew enormously over the last three decades, it's actually doubled since the 1950s, is basically now the same as men. So we won't get any more addition to the labor force by adding more women to the labor force, to the paid labor force. And then finally, in terms of college education, the percentage of the population with a college education in the United States has basically peaked in the last decade. And nationally, we're not making the kind of investments in higher education capacity to grow the number of college graduates much above what it is right now. Now, in the 1950s, about 10% of adults had a four-year degree. Today, it's about almost 30% of young adults have a college degree. That's not going to increase very much in the next decade. So we add all those factors together, it's very likely that the job market in the United States will be constrained by the availability of talented people. So having a place that's attractive to talented young people is a huge economic advantage going forward. And then finally, the issue here is, you know, can we create new businesses? And I think this is a really surprising and actually very optimistic indicator. This looks back to the last full year for which we have comparable data for all 50 states. And it shows the percentage increase in the number of new businesses in each state. And recall that Oregon, you know, very high level of unemployment, in 2003 was one of the weaker economies in the United States, ranked eighth in the nation for the percentage increase in new businesses. So there's a lot of entrepreneurial activity, and it doesn't necessarily show up immediately in the form of a lot of hiring, but going forward, having people starting new businesses, employing people, pursuing new ideas is one of the sources that we think will drive the Oregon economy forward. And as I suggested earlier, that, you know, clustering is really an important factor in driving economic growth. And I want to talk just a little bit about what we see happening in some of our industry clusters. because we think there are some really positive signs there. If you look at the industry clusters that characterize the Oregon economy, and you find industry clusters that are actually very strong, very world-class industries. Now, the largest industry in the state now, high tech, accounts for 10% of all the semiconductors produced in the United States. But more important than the volume of what we produce is the place that we occupy in the food chain in high technology. We don't just make the chips here. We have the people who design the very latest cutting-edge chips that Intel produces, the Pentium processors, for example. In 2002, all of the Pentium 4 processors made in the world were made in Hillsboro, Oregon, because that is the single most advanced plant that Intel has. They develop their new manufacturing processes as well here. So this is not just, you know, the third and fourth generation copycat. This is the very cutting edge work that happens in Oregon. And it isn't just Intel. We have, a whole array of firms that specialize in making the hardware and software for designing new chips and new technology. And we have people who make the tools, for example, that are used in the emerging science of nanotechnology. We have other important industry clusters as well that in their own rights are world class. You can think about the sporting goods and apparel cluster, companies like Nike, Columbia Sportswear, Adidas America, and others that are the world leaders in what they do. In the wood products business, we've lost ground in a lot of commodity products, particularly in wood panels, but we've had a lot of growth in engineered wood products, things like laminated veneer lumber, glulam beams, and particularly in millwork, where we have a lot of very strong value-added producers. In the fruits and vegetables and in the agricultural industry as well. Again, we've seen some declines in the commodity products, but we've seen real growth in the people who focus on specialty and niche markets. And some of them are gourmet products, and you can think about Harry and David down in Medford, which has done extremely well. You can think about the natural foods and organic foods markets, which are the most rapidly growing segments of the U.S. food processing industry. Again, Oregon has leaders there. You also, in agriculture, think about nursery products. The single largest sector now of Oregon agriculture, accounting for about 20% of farm sales, is the nursery products business, which is very much a high-end, differentiated, quality-oriented industry that markets its products at the high end of the marketplace throughout the nation. Now, a lot of those are urban industries, but we find increasing examples of this really in every corner of the state. The millwork industry concentrated in and around Central Oregon. You drive down just north of Eugene and Coburg, the second largest center of RV manufacturing in the United States. The largest is still in Elkhart, Indiana. Windsurfing gear and apparel manufacturers in the gorge in and around Hood River. The world-class bronze casting you see in the Wallowas and in Joseph. Aluminum boat manufacturers in southern Oregon. I know Bill sells a lot of product to them. And then finally, and one of the most emblematic examples, and we had Doc and Connie Hatfield, who run Oregon Country Beef, come and address the Oregon Business Summit last year, is Oregon Country Beef, which really in many ways signifies the transformation that we're seeing in a lot of traditional natural resource-based industries. And Oregon Country Beef, I don't know if you all know the company, is really a cooperative of a number of ranchers. I think it's up to about four dozen ranchers in central and eastern Oregon. And they, started out being very frustrated because, they found that, a lot of people weren't buying beef and they wanted to know why. And they found that, that while, there was a lot of consumer resistance to beef as it was traditionally marketed, that people were interested in a product that was hormone-free, that they knew was, raised in an environmentally sensitive way where they could identify, that it was, grass-fed rather than finished off in a feedlot. And so they really developed a new way to reach consumers in restaurants and in specialty marketplaces and to get a higher price for a product that had a really distinctive quality to it. And so they've been very successful in doing that. And as we all know, with concerns about the safety of red meat in the world, in the United States in the last few years, they looked very, very prescient in anticipating the direction that the market is going. But again, this is not something that's restricted to high-tech companies or big companies. We see it throughout the economy. It's where innovators can develop new, higher quality products, in many cases building on the strong traditions that we have of quality in Oregon and exploit a growing global marketplace to be successful. And that's really, in essence, the kind of vision that we see for growing the Oregon economy in the years ahead. And so with that as a economic description, I'll turn it over to Bill, who can relate this back to the thinking behind the Oregon business plan.
I guess first I just have to say any questions.
Before we move on, any questions to the Joe? Okay, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Perry, thank you for giving us this information. What about
thank you. What about government growth? I don't see that in there as far as a sector. Also, what on the wood portion, on the wood sector, why don't we have logging in there?
I'm sorry, logging?
Uh-huh.
Now, thank you, Representative Nelson. Two things, government growth and logging. Well, we didn't look at government growth separately because it's not part of what we call the traded sector of the economy. The government sector of the economy really depends on the overall health of the Oregon economy and the health of the traded sector. So it's the ability of those traded sector businesses, high-tech, wood products, logging, food processing, to be competitive that brings in the income that provides the economic base that then pays the taxes and provides for government services. So in the long run, the ability to afford government services, pay government employees, to have the things that taxes pay for, depend on the health of the economy. So we didn't look at that as a driver of the economy because it's really not. It's dependent on the health of the economy. In terms of logging, we fold that into our description of the wood products industry. And actually, there's some really good examples of Oregon firms who have been real innovators in the logging industry and in forestry generally. And we know that Oregon is really a leading supplier nationally of a couple of things. First of all, some of the equipment that's used in the mills and in logging. In particular aerial logging, helicopter logging, and I know Bill can talk about the cluster of companies that we have in southern Oregon that are specialists in that. And then also, if we think about the firefighting industry, Oregon is one of the leaders in providing private firefighting services, not only in the state, but around the United States. And it's the expertise of companies that we have here that have enabled that industry to grow.
And Mr. Chetham, could I just ask about the tourism market? Do you include that?
Well, tourism is part of the traded sector of the economy, but actually it's considerably smaller than the other sectors that we talked about in terms of its employment impact in the state.
And what is LVL again?
Oh, I'm sorry. LVL is laminated veneer lumber. It's lumber that's dimensional wood products that are made by essentially gluing together layers of veneer.
Thank you.
Okay, for the members, and we are going to look at the tourism and the film industry fairly soon. So you will have a lot of information about it. And Vice Chair Bruin has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Mr. Cole. Excellent presentation, the second time I've heard it, actually. So it's sink in finally. We mentioned the three factors that the traded sector success will depend on, your work has shown: innovation, talent, and entrepreneurship. I think this committee would be very interested in, as well, in what sort of role tax and regulatory policy plays, either pro or against, and specifically what can the legislature do to improve that to help these other factors within the traded sector. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Byrne. I think actually I'll defer that question to Bill, because as we go through the business plan, and you see here the outline of it, we outline the vision, and then down we get to the initiatives. We talk about the specifics in terms of policy that we think underpin the opportunities to influence that. And one of the components is public finance, which addresses that set of issues about taxes in particular. And Bill, and I don't want to steal his thunder, he'll talk about the 4P framework that is really the strategy of this, that describes really the way to think about how public policy can influence the economy in a favorable way.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Nelson?
I might just ask if I could. So gaming is not included as part of tourism?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, statistically, I don't think we gone through and separated out. Most of the gaming in Oregon really is Oregonians spending money gaming rather than being an export industry. A little bit of it would be export, but not very much. And one of the things that has happened is in the last 2 years, we've adopted a new way of classifying businesses, and the gaming industry used to be, and what was tribal gaming got reported as government employment, actually, because it was run by the tribes, for example.
Video poker,
and lottery, and bars just gets put in the eating and drinking establishments. But the Native American casinos in particular have, just in the last couple of years, been, now we report them separately as entertainment,
entertainment.
Part of the entertainment industry.
Then there's no more questions to Joe, and we'll move on to the Tom Dyer.
Thank you, Chairman. Again, relative to the vision, I think one of the things that struck us early and struck us hard was that Oregon could, in essence, either become a backwater or it could take the high road. And I think based on what Joe was talking about, that if you take the high road, you better be able to compete in the world economy. You better be able to innovate. So we're basically glad to report that, as Joe mentioned, that as we went throughout the state of Oregon, whether or not we were in the Dalles or John Day or Newport or Medford or Crown Falls, we heard from companies that were, again, working towards making sure that their products were competitive and innovative on a worldwide basis. And again, we heard about the tremendous research and development going on, whether it's in new sources of energy or new designs for backpacks. And again, I think that vision is very reassuring to us to be able to hear that. Again, there's still this tremendous driven portion of our economy that's talking about product innovation. So that really does get us to the strategy, which I think, again, we're getting closer and closer to the roles that we look to you playing as citizen legislators in assisting the economy in moving forward. And we basically frame that in what we call the four P's of prosperity, that this is where public policy has dramatic impacts on our success of having a good economy for Oregon. And so, again, they're pioneering innovation, they're people, they're placing productivity, and we'll go through those. The interesting thing about people is that it really talks about what we think is the biggest asset that Oregon has. And again, in developing that asset, we try to take a look specifically at education and specifically around public education as a critical component of that. And as you'll see as we get into the initiatives, and one of the big changes we made with the business plan this year was that we quit segmenting it. We tried to take a look at it basically pre-K through life relative to public investment. And I think, again, that will help frame the discussion better for us as we go forward. We know we live in a special place. We'd like to be able to monitor that, particularly relative to safe and healthy communities. But again, this is an area that if you ask Oregonians and if you look at our relative ranking in the United States, it's very high, and I think we're all interested in continuing to promote that. The area of productivity is an area where, again, I think that we've been making some tremendous strides within the state of Oregon. I think particularly if you go back to the last legislative session and the work that you all did on streamlining. And again, you can't underestimate how important that is in really making it easy for a business in Medford, Oregon, or Portland, or Prineville should succeed, is that tremendous success has been made there. What we're hoping that can be done as you interact with your compatriots at the county level and the local level is to try and encourage them to make the same type of progress that the state is making in working with regulation. I think it's one of the more interesting things. We have the spider graph that I'm sure you've all seen too, that we always ask Oregonians to fill out where they think we are relative to the state, and then we also have the advantage of the Oregon Progress Board going back and looking at trying to compare apples with apples and oranges. And it was interesting that we found that if you look at really where we are, we're very, very good. But the perception of most Oregonians is that we're overregulated. And again, I think that part of what we need to do is tell the story of really how successful Oregon is in streamlining some of that. And then I think, you know, clearly we know that pioneering innovation, that, you know, the ability to create new patents, to develop the new economy is so critical. And I guess at the end of the day, it's people and pioneering innovation that really going to make the difference for Oregon. We also know that while we try and look at this relative to how we develop a healthy economy, that what we call the fifth P of public finance is also integral to where the Oregon business plan has been and is going. Because we know that if we have a successful economy, that economy then produces the resources for the services that Oregonians need to not only take care of all Oregonians, but to be positioned for this continual cycle to go forward. And again, the basic concept that we try and bring to the table is that if we can grow the economy as successfully as possible, that the actual percentage that we need to draw out of that economy to run the quality of government that we want should go down as long as we keep making the pie a little bit bigger. So that gets us to the initiatives where we'd like to spend the rest of our time, if possible, because, again, as we've talked about, that we know that it's fine to talk about the platitudes, it's fine to talk about the goal and the vision, but if we don't break it down into bite-sized bits, that nothing will get done. And one of the things that I'm very proud of that the Oregon Business Plan and working with the Leadership Committee has accomplished this past year is that we have been able to downsize a little bit and focus our efforts. So as we know, it's so easy to keep adding to the recipe. Well, I'd like to have, you know, the Thorndike spice in there and the Courtright spice in there and stuff. But after a while, it's so big you can't do anything with it. And what we've done is been able to streamline our initiatives down to 9 major areas, and then basically have placed them for you to see how they fit within the different areas of importance, from public finance to pioneering innovation to people, place, and again, just this whole question of sometimes patting ourselves on the back and telling ourselves and the rest of the world that we're doing a pretty good job, again, is the importance of branding and again, making sure that Oregon is proud of where it stands within the economy. So, again, as we're talking about, we have this framework, we have the initiatives. What's next? this is our history. So, again, this is just a snapshot looking back, again, going back to January 2002, talking about how we went out across the state. We figured out where our industry focus groups were. We have had meetings throughout the state, 2 lots of it, and again, we're continuing to dialogue. And of course, one of the major advantages that this effort has is the importance of the internet and being able to collect information from people.
Representative Nelson.
I love the business summit. Drive and that sort of thing. But could you go back to the initiatives and tell us if we have a part to play in those? Are these ones that are being drafted by?
Yeah, I think we'll get to that very quickly.
I think if we could finish up on the slides, and then we'll go right to the initiatives, and that's what's really in this book here, and we'll speak to each of those initiatives. So just summarize it.
Some of them we talked about, okay. Endorsements, again, across the state. Talking again about the internet, OregonBusinessPlan.org. This is our successes from 2003.
This, I might just pause. We go out and talk about the last legislative session. I know there was one of this, it often surprises people. We think the last session, at least from the perspective of the Oregon Business Plan, was enormously successful. And people look at me often like, what are we talking about? You know, we don't, you know, that was a very difficult session. But if you actually look underneath what you accomplished last time, it's really quite an amazing set of accomplishments from our perspective that really helped the economy drive forward, which really gave for the business leadership a lot of confidence that this kind of process could work, which really, I think, sets up, from our point of view at least, the conversation for this session. We think there's yet another opportunity to do a lot of great work. But again, you did a lot of amazing work last time, and we're really proud to support any way we can your efforts. Just to close here, this summarizes that we have a solid plan in place, good initiatives in progress, multiple endorsements, and the initiatives established. And with that, we had the summit last December, and we reviewed the comments from that session. And today, you're the first to receive it. We'll be passing out to all the members. This is the initiative guide that we'd recommend for 2005. Much of it is similar to what you saw at the summit. We did add some key budget items to this list. We had some items in the governor's budget that we'd recommended, and we've highlighted those that are in the budget. One item that wasn't in the budget we're encouraging to fund. But I think it's a general guide to you on the legislative session in the very near future. As we see the bills coming in, we will also on the internet highlight all the key bills that relate to all of these initiatives. And we hope throughout the session to give you updates on the email about where the legislation is from our perspective and what we see the big opportunities for you to make a difference. Should we just touch quickly on what the initiatives are, and then I don't know which ones. There are nine of them, and they cover a lot of ground. So do you want me to?
Yeah.
Let me just touch on them quickly, and maybe just go to the cover, and then we can deal. And you saw the slide, but on public finance, well, we'll just walk through page four. Page three is the public finance recommendations. In public finance, we are focusing this time particularly on the state budget and the work you're doing on changing the budget process. We think that's some of the most exciting work that we've seen. We're very excited about that. We continue to believe revenue stability is a key priority for the legislature. This downturn showed how damaging a recession is to the public finance system, and creating a rainy day fund strikes us as a critical priority. And then for the business community, we're going to create a performance excellence award, which we'll be talking about. The second major initiative area on page four is probably the one that relates most to this committee, the expand capacity for economic innovation. This speaks to the transformation that began last session in the Economic Development Department towards a focus on innovation and cluster development. We're really pleased with the work of the department in this area. I know I believe Pat Scruggs will probably be appearing before you, but the merging of the work of the commission, the Economic Community Development Commission, the OCID Commission on Innovation that Alan Alley chairs, we see a huge opportunity to bring the ideas around innovation and cluster development together under one umbrella, and to really start listening to the needs of clusters and integrating a lot of our work on workforce development, patent development, university connections into an integrated strategy. This is an area where I believe Oregon can be at the forefront nationally in developing industry clusters by bringing business leaders together to learn what their needs are and communicating those needs to the variety of different resources that are available in the public sector and the community at large. Provide a wonderful framework. Some key areas in here, the ONAMI investments we're recommending, I'm sure you're familiar with, some other work relating to higher ed, the Strategic Reserve Fund. We think there's a lot of great momentum here. Again, you'll be hearing lots about this, I'm sure you already have, about how the department is transforming itself to support this vision, and we want to be part of it. One of the things we announced at the summit is we now have a cluster website up that we developed. We're starting to keep track of all the clusters in the state. If you're interested in hearing from business leaders by clusters to hear illustrations of what we're talking about, it's probably the most powerful way to get connected with the vision, is to hear, and again, the clusters, I would stress, at the summit we had the food processors, a fairly traditional cluster. They are growing gangbusters and thinking about how to organize themselves to add to the productivity. So you have what you might call traditional industry, the forest products industry. Similarly, some of our great industries are finding ways to add innovation to the highest, you know, the new areas like nanotechnology, where you're seeing incredible work between business and higher education to develop whole new products and whole new industries. And so, again, I would encourage you to hear from them. Again, I think it's the most powerful way to hear what the issues are in the economy. Again, Bill mentioned education on page 6. We think your biggest opportunity this legislative session is to transform the way we think about education. It's a huge opportunity. The business community, this is the number one issue. Every place we went in the summit, if you want to ask, if you say, what is the most important ingredient for the future of the economy, it's education. I mean, it just hands down, that's where the game is going to play. We think there's an opportunity in Oregon to transform our education delivery to provide a much higher quality product by thinking about the whole continuum. Huge topic, and we're prepared to bring resources into that conversation with you. Forest industry, we've got a great team. Alan Ford leads, I think, lots of opportunity to rethink the forest products industry role in the economy. Again, we need a stable source of supply as well as the focus on innovation that we've talked about elsewhere. Transportation, you did great work last time with the transportation package. The big highlight here is Connect Oregon, a multimodal program. Again, we really encourage that to move forward. Traded sector, so transportation, again, we've got, a good concrete set of objectives this time in that area. Traded sector land availability, this is a huge one. A lot of progress, Bill said on a task force last time, a lot of progress has been made on making industrial land available throughout the state. But there's still a lot of conceptual work to be done. One of the key recommendations is this is time for a 30-year review. That's 30 years into LCDC, a time to review the land use policy. And as part of that, we would encourage you to look at industrial land.
We might just, we also know the tremendous constraints that are facing you around the allocation of revenue. And one of the things that we did do, and it's highlighted in the footnote, around the available land, the land initiative, is if you go back and look at the economic development budget recommendations that we're making, we differ a little bit from the governor on that and ask for some additions to some of those programs. And as we understand, the rule is that if you ask for an addition, you have to subtract it someplace else. And so the connection between these two initiatives retains that balance within the framework that we know that you have to work with.
Yeah, we understand that budget discipline. Permitting, again, Bill, I think already touched on this. We think you've done a lot of great work. There's more to be done at the state level. The big opportunity is to work with cities and counties on an integrated permitting streamlining effort. We see huge differences around the state in terms of local regulatory climate, and we think we need to focus, get our efforts focused, understanding what parts of the state are doing well, how to learn from them, and pass on best practices to the rest of the state. The new one this year is healthcare. It's a huge issue. It was consistently right up there at the top, only slightly behind education. We have a new task force. We do not have all the answers on healthcare, but we've got a lot of energy and commitment to rethinking how we provide healthcare in the state to lower cost and increase quality. Again, this is a very, very large issue to the business community. And finally, Grand Oregon. Bill said we think it's a great initiative. We're seeing it work already. There's a great track record in the last year with your support, and we would recommend funding that. It's not in the governor's budget, but we think it should be in your budget, and because I think with the leverage we can get, we've seen already across sectors and for a variety of purposes is very, very powerful, so we'd encourage you to focus on that. That is a very quick run through the initiatives, but what I would say is in each of these initiatives, there are policy papers on the web. We have initiative leaders who would be happy to come before you if you're in your areas of interest or for your other committee assignments. If you have, for example, the Education Committee, we certainly have folks available for you there. But again, any of the initiative leaders you'd like to hear from, I know they would be available and to bring, their perspective, either formally in the committee or to meet with you individually. A lot of what this is about is a partnership between public and private sectors, and we want to bring our resources to bear as best we can to help you do your job as best we can help you do.
I think I would just close by saying that, the discipline that Joe and everybody tried to apply to us is remember the traded sector. Healthcare is one of those areas where you can say, well, what's with this? And you can you can stretch it and make it a traded sector economy. But the thing that we heard throughout the state and talking to business leaders, you know, the two elephants on the table that it didn't take much for us to get input from business leaders around the state was around healthcare and around drug abuse. Those were the two things that nobody wants to talk about, but if you give them an opportunity, they will. Healthcare is having such a dramatic impact on competitiveness that we stretched it a bit and realized that this is an area that, even though it's not pure traded sector, it's so important that we should be able to make some advances on. I think the other thing, and it goes with forest products too, is thanks to the seniority and the position of our U.S. senators, that we know that the natural resources are very important to both Senator Smith and Wyden, and we know that health care is also very, very important to both of those gentlemen, and of course with their new positions on the Finance Committee. Again, we're trying to figure out, well, how can we build on that, leverage that, and I can tell you, just as in forest products, that both senatorial offices are very, very interested, that if we can come up with some different ideas, concepts, prototypes to try out relative to improving the delivery of health care, that, again, I think that our federal partners will be there.
And thank you very much for the presentation. It's very insightful, and I do appreciate it. I have more questions. Concerning the severe recessions we experienced in the last 3 years or so, you, especially Joe Courtright, attributed such as a migration of the people coming to our state. And the second, that the high-tech bubble has been broken. And the third one mentioned that the we are depended on more manufacturing sources plus others. What we are trying to think as a policymaker, how could we prevent that severe recession in the future if it's happening again? What kind of a policy we need to set up at this time to prevent in the future such things happen again? If you have any thought, could you give us some light on it?
Mr. Chairman, you always ask hard questions. A couple of things. First of all, you know, if we had a different industrial base in Oregon, then this recession might not have hit us so hard. You know, for example, if you looked at Washington, D.C., you would see that this recession didn't affect Washington, D.C. very much because the federal government just, you know, didn't go down the way durable goods manufacturing
did. They're spending our tax dollars.
Well, yeah, that's why. Yeah, and similarly, Washington State has done better than Oregon, but then it has, you know, actually a lot of defense contracting that we don't have. They had about an eight-time bigger increase in defense contracting up there than we did. So
that's that government issue I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, and so part of, but more broadly, you know, I don't think you can, you know, necessarily change the portfolio of industries that you're good in. I mean, you know, in the best of all possible worlds, we'd be like, you would be with your personal financial portfolio. You'd go out and diversify it and say, instead of being so heavy into high tech and logging, you know, we'd have just a little bit in every single industry. Unfortunately, if you think about clusters, that's not the way economies work. Economies are different than your investment portfolio, and you have to be really good at the things that you're good at. And the biggest problem for Oregon, I think, is the public finance problem, that we have a public finance system that accentuates the worst part of our economy. We have an economy that's very heavily based on durable goods, and we rely heavily on the income tax and the taxation, in particular, capital gains and profits. So we have an economy that's more volatile than the average state in the United States, and a revenue system that amplifies that. And as Duncan and Bill pointed out, you know, we don't have a rainy day fund, which, given the kind of economy we have and the kind of fiscal system we have, we really, really need to have something to insulate us from those shocks. Long term, you know, I don't think we can radically change the kind of industries we have. I think we have to do the things to make those industries as successful as we possibly can. And the critical pieces, and Bill alluded to both of them, are the talent base and innovation, because that's what companies need to succeed. There will continue to be up and down cycles in every industry, but we just want to make sure that our businesses are the ones that are poised to be the successful ones coming out of the recessions, because we haven't repealed the business cycle.
Okay, and I'd like to have one more question. In our state, we have a program, strategic investment program. Anyone investing, is that the threshold of $1 billion, I believe?
I'm not sure what the threshold
is. Yes, I think so. That's $1 billion. Then we give them a special tax break. And do you think that has caused to bring mega companies to attract to our state? Do you think it's a good policy to continue to do that, or do we need to lower that threshold so it's a medium-sized companies could come to our state?
Mr. Chairman, and this is my answer as an economist, and it may not be the same answer other people would give, but I think the strategic investment program removes what I would call a sharp edge in our tax system. We have a system that particularly at the local level, depends on property taxes. Now, other states would have more sales tax, for example. And for very large capital investments, like several hundred million dollar wafer fabrication facility, which imposed relatively few additional costs on local government, we had a property tax system which essentially penalized that kind of investment. And I think it made sense in that exceptional case to say, we want to file down that sharp edge in our tax system. But the reason why an Intel was interested in Portland didn't come here because of the tax incentive, but they came here because we had a really favorable place for the semiconductor industry to grow, a real good talent base, and so on. And I think what we did was we took away what was the impediment to them, financially coming here. For other businesses, when you look at Oregon's tax climate in the aggregate and compare it to other states, we have a relatively low level of overall taxation, and in particular business taxation. So I don't think radically changing the business tax climate in Oregon is the most important factor to stimulate our economy. Although I would be very alert to things, where there are these sharp edges, where maybe there's some specific feature of the Oregon tax system that works to the disadvantage of a business that would really like to be here but financially can't make it pencil out.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Merkley.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm very heartened to see the manufacturing numbers. There's certainly the theory that manufacturing jobs will continue to disappear, and there's been a lot of conversation about chip plants moving first to Latin America and then to Asia, and the difficulty of competing on a labor basis. But this particular area also involves very high capital expenditures related to the amount of labor. And so when one takes that into account and one's looking out 5, 10 years or 20 years, do we see a situation where the differential in wages, even despite the differential in wages, if you will, with Latin America and Asia, we're in a position to be competitive due to other aspects of the state? And are there things we need to be thinking about for 5, 10, or 20 years out to sustain that manufacturing infrastructure with the relatively high-paying jobs?
Can I speak to that? I run a manufacturing company. We build other people's products now. No single line of my business represents more than 20% of my business. So it's a very dynamic, flexible business, and I think that flexibility is what allows me to be successful. A quick little story: that one of the industries we build for is the gas turbine industry for different componentry for the big power plants going in. And needless to say, over the last couple of years, that market has gone through an interesting cycle in the United States with the Enrons of the world, etc. But two of the companies we built for are Canadian companies. And again, they can have these products built anywhere in the world they want. And interestingly enough, it's that those external variables you have no control over, but all of a sudden create opportunities for a manufacturer like myself. And that big change has been the Canadian dollar is now 25% stronger than it was at its weakest point. So that when our customer in Ontario, who is marketing a product, has the technology, and is now looking where in the world he's going to have it built to those quality standards. And again, you know, there's a limited niche market. You know, you could cut the cost of a power plant by 10%, and you're not going to build that many more power plants. But what we're seeing right now is where right now we booked over $1 million worth of orders that we're working on right now for our Canadian customers, because now their captive shops in Ontario are no longer competitive. And again, it's that ability to remain flexible and to respond to the situation is what is so critical. Now, on the other hand, we have to make sure we have access to the least inexpensive steel we can. So it's so important that Oregon Steel Mills can bring in those big plates, unload them at the dock, and then transform them into the plate that I need to produce it with. So it's, again, it's a tremendously dynamic economy. But again, I think what I have seen and what I particularly enjoy about the Oregon Metals industry is, again, our ability to be flexible and dynamic and respond to that market. So I'm excited with that. But again, the key is how do we ultimately make sure that I have access to talented young people who want to work in manufacturing, that can come into my plant and build a product that has metric measurements, you know, with the blueprint that was produced in France. And that's at the bottom line, that's what's going to keep me in business, is whether or not we have talented employees in the future.
And we just that was a fabulous example. Joe helped us with a future manufacturing task group. I think Bill was, I'm not sure, but anyway, with a group of different manufacturers. And again, the same thing you heard came up time and again. It's, if you're talking about basic commodity manufacturing with low costs, you know, very simple manufacturing, it's moving abroad. It's not going to be here in Oregon. The manufacturing that will remain is that is described by Bill. It's high-end, it's innovative, it's got talented people associated with it. In many cases, it's re-engineering and redesigning the manufacturing process. If you look at Intel, for example, you know, they actually redesign how they manufacturing chips as they put in the new facilities. And so it's, again, all about knowledge and innovation. And on that basis, I think we can be very competitive in manufacturing. But again, to the theme, we need to listen really hard to those companies and learn what they need. And they have a lot of needs, including skilled workforce. And a lot of them are saying right now, we don't have the skilled workforce to drive our companies forward. So we need to listen very hard. But if we do, if we listen hard and support them, I think we can have a view and remain a strong manufacturing state. Joe, do you want?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley, one other point. You know, we see this most in manufacturing, but it's already happening in services now. And if you think about call centers, if you think about transaction processing, if you think about basic accounting now, those things are getting globalized. Anything that you can put on the Internet, you can basically move anywhere for free. And so it's really an issue of things that are routine and simple are the things that go overseas. And the things that are creative and complex and innovative and customized are the things that are most likely to stay here. And those all depend on our talent base. So don't assume that this is just about manufacturing industries. It increasingly will apply to service industries as well.
And Representative Buckley, and then
thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, thank you very much. Tremendous presentation. I actually campaigned on the Oregon Business Plan during the campaign as part of my regular stump speech, because I believe passionately in what you're doing in terms of the communication process of bringing together stakeholders and coming up with this vision that talks about innovation in our state. I was pleased to be at the Business Summit as well and listen to the presentations. I want to ask you for additional leadership, even though you've done a tremendous amount already. In every speech at the Business Summit, and we're talking right now about talent, development of talent in our state, over and over again, the plea was we must invest in higher education, we must invest in higher education. I would like to ask you for your help. help us invest in higher education in the same way that we need to spread the word that Oregon is a great place to do business, that we are streamlining regulations. We need to change our attitude, I believe, in our state that says we actually are going to invest again, that we believe in the partnership with higher education. And I would like to see from the Oregon business community a willingness to invest, a willingness to say we are going to pay more for the services that we need. So in your capacity as leaders, I hope that you will spread that word and encourage members of the business community to step forward to work with us to put together a package for higher education that's even beyond what the governor has proposed, because I think that's the direction we need to go. And I'd also like to just ask, in terms of healthcare as a cluster, again, there's so many elements of the plan that are fantastic. Brand Oregon's fantastic. It's helping us a lot in Jackson County. But in terms of healthcare, with a booming healthcare industry in Jackson County as well, by looking at the delivery of the healthcare process, is there potential there to lower costs, create jobs, as a new industry in healthcare?
We just had a long session on healthcare yesterday. This is a new area for us. But I think there are two pieces on healthcare to think about. One, I would describe it as a critical infrastructure. And you sort of think about it like education or transportation. And it's the most expensive part of our infrastructure. It's been growing, and it's, again, a huge issue, if you will, in terms of business costs. And as we've diagnosed that infrastructure, we think a revolution is going to be required in how we pay for it, in terms of the insurance practices we adopt to create stronger incentives for innovation and productivity. And as we do that, I think there will be transformation of the systems around database systems, around the way we deliver to chronic disease. A whole variety of changes are going to be required to provide high-quality, high-value, low-cost health care in America and in Oregon. As we do that, there are a lot of very exciting young companies who are very eager to help the healthcare community make that transformation. We have some wonderful companies that are interested in database management and create, you know, all kinds of new technologies we're discovering. And if we accelerate the innovation and the transformation of the healthcare industry in Oregon and really work hard at that, I believe by being the first mover into that area, we will create companies that then sell those products and services outside the state and create a new cluster.
Absolutely.
So that's the prize. We have not only lower healthcare costs because we have a more efficient system, but we also have new companies that are selling those great ideas and lowering healthcare costs other places. So I think it's a big opportunity. We are committed. This is the new initiative we added this time, and we are going to keep plowing into this topic. We'd love to work with you on it.
Thank you.
And I think it's interesting, Representative Buckley, that if you looked at the article yesterday from Intel, that as Intel refocuses themselves, that one of the key areas they see is in healthcare and medicine. And for any of you that are in the metropolitan area, the number of people that are now have moved from Intel into kind of like the old Tektronix world of starting this creation of new businesses and stuff, the numbers of
yes.
potentials out there, if we're willing to listen and see how can we help, Intel is a tremendous driver. A lot of their semi-retired folks are now going into developing companies in the healthcare field. So, again, that's a good idea. Just on education, I think one of the things that Oregon Business Council is very proud of is, just to your point, is we actually received a grant from the Oregon Community Foundation, have now brought in additional outside mm-hmm. dollars from outside of the state, where we have a council that we've put together that really generated this, because originally we're going to just talk about higher education, and we really know it had to be all of education. And so we're very, very pleased, and I think we have some very good representation from the legislature on that.
We have five legislators. It's a higher ed roundtable, we call it, although we may rename it because of the way we've morphed. But we are very focused. I mean, most of our time is on education. So anything, we have lots of ideas on education transformation that we think will make the system better. We also understand the key role philanthropy plays, and we need to figure out bring those resources to the conversation. But we need a higher ed strategy, and we need an education strategy that delivers highly educated, talented people to Oregon in the future, and that's a key theme for us.
Okay. Let's call the Representative Dallin.
I'm trying to learn 19 questions into one here, so be patient with them. What I would like to visit with you about education,
sure.
As Vice Chairman of the Education Committee, I want to hear from you tremendously, but that's for another time. Right now, I represent House District 59, just the other side of the Cascades, the Dalles, Madras, John Day. And I want to know, our industry is field and fiber. And I say business because our farmers, if we don't pack cherries and reach the Asian market, we don't survive. If we don't customize the way we grow wheat, we don't survive. So when you talk about innovation, all the rules that you laid on the table count. What I want to know is where does the farmer, either tree fruit or wheat, or the forester, which I think is another business that fits all the definitions you placed, where do they go for best practices and innovation? And my modus operandi is always to look at what do we have in place for them right now before we start building something brand new. Do you know?
I think, you know, and one of the more interesting community sessions we had was in the Dalles, and I guess that the thing I was struck with, and I'm going to get it wrong, but your community college district up there, Upper Columbia, Lower, okay, I could just sense from the people that attended our community session there that they had the basic ingredients. If they just had a little more resource, particularly through your community college system, to be able to put in place exactly the type of access to information that you were talking about. Because we had one person at that community who talked about, I can remember, very successful building for parts for the military stuff, and was talking about wanting to grow, and then realizing he'd reached a ceiling in small business, now he's a middle businessman, and again, that's where it was fantastic to have Senator Wyden and his staff there, because, you know, it took him about a nanosecond for a staff member to get a card to
the... He was converting seawater to drinkable water.
And so, again, that's very, very good. But I think we've got to work with the infrastructure we have, and particularly around our community college system.
Well, and the other one would be, of course, the extension service. I mean, we've seen that out in the field a lot. You know, OSU, it just plays a critical role in agriculture, in crop development and product development. And again, that would be an existing resource that I think we ought to be looking at always to figure out how to provide more research and innovation for the ag community, along with, of course, the Department of Ag. Katie Kobut. Again, we've talked with her, and again, one of the things I'm very proud of this time is bringing the food processing industry, the nursery industry is very interested. As you say, the same principles apply to agriculture and natural resources as to high technology in terms of what we're trying to do. So we want to build this unified picture of what it takes, as you described, and then the whole idea of clustering is to think through who can best help clusters receive the services they need to be successful, and that's what this game is all about.
As I come out of this meeting, then I should go home and work desperately for innovation and dissemination through extension service and community colleges.
And
those are the existing.
And
resources.
I would say the Department of Agriculture, of course, as well. Katie, I would look to them.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the excellent presentation.
Asking good questions. All right, any other questions? Representative Nelson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I mentioned previously on Tuesday that I've been amazed that I said University of California, should have said State of California, is up there now buying our land, investing in great growing sites. Have y'all worked with any of our groups, you know, in the state finance system as far as their investment here in their own people? I just find that strange. And then when I mentioned it yesterday, then others came forward and said, yeah, they've been here in Marion County, Donna. They bought land here, too, not only Yamhill County. And so it seems strange to me that a state, you know, California would be up here, you know, putting us out of the wine business.
The public employees, I see, the retirement system is investing in organs. Well, of course, last session you made a major headway for venture capital by directing part of the state retirement fund to a critical priority for the state. It was, I think, a very good move to get for venture capital, and that, of course, is moving along. It'll be a statewide program. So,
but you don't hear about from Oregon. You know, you hear about the other states coming in.
Yeah. I see. Well, we've done some, but maybe there's more to be done there. I'll have to,
maybe we could maybe on our committee we could get Randall Edwards in
and
first people to come forth and do something. And also on that same issue, wanted to mention that we've been great. I'm so impressed every time I get the OSU or any of these college books talking about all their innovations. I mean, that is just incredible. That would be a great one to have for this committee. But then we have, locations like OHSU come up with, I mentioned this the other day, cures for cancer, and then go to Germany, for the licensing agreement or financing of the, pharmaceutical company, to mm-hmm. produce. So I think we ought to somehow curtail that because it's our investment in them that mm-hmm. keeps them going. Do we work with them?
That's a long a long answer, Representative Nelson, on that one. But this is really where the whole Innovation Council and Pat Scruggs, they're really thinking hard about how you take university ideas and translate them into products in Oregon. Now, not every idea is going to generate an Oregon product. I don't think you can't really hold ideas necessarily, but I think there's more we can be doing to translate ideas into product development, and that's really what a lot of this Innovation Council work is about.
And finally, my last statement, Mr. Chair, I think this is incredible that we passed the Private-Public Partnership Act for Transportation. We're about to do the first one.
Yes.
And if we're fortunate enough, it'll be in my county, the Newburgh-Dundee Bypass. I just think that is absolutely amazing that we could do that in a track. I think there are only 10 financing transportation institutions in the nation. Mm-hmm. So I think that's incredible, and I think we could do it in other areas.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Representative Nelson, yeah, that is, of course, a recommendation in the business plan. We were thrilled you did that last session. It's, again, you'll see more on that. We're very eager to work with the legislature on those ideas. I mean, I think there's a revolution in delivery and net transportation that you are encouraging, and it's terrific.
Okay. Jim, you'd like to make a comment?
I would just like to mention, Mr. Chair, that it occurs to me that investment comes into Oregon from outside of the state, it's a good sign. The reason investment is coming is because people are expecting profit. They're expecting that the state is going to do well. So I think it is a good sign that our economy is moving and shows potential.
I'd be very disappointed, Mr. Chair, to find out that we're investing down there.
It goes both ways, I guess. All right. And before we adjourn, I'd like to recognize Mike Schertzgeber again being here. I'm just recognizing you. And thank you very much. And he's from my district. It's more important than anything else. And since no one signed up in the testimony sheet, and if there's no questions from our panels, we stand adjourned until Friday, right? And we are going to have two outside meetings. Hopefully one at the east side of the mountain, maybe one at the Portland metro area. And we like to do it sometime, if not January, early February, before we get busier. And so hopefully that we might be able to have one meeting at the Intel or in that area, maybe one for the Dalles or the Hood River in that area.
Or Geldwin.
Yes, mm-hmm. So I think that will be a good way to go. So that's what we are planning to do. Also, we have...
I invite you to R.B. Weber, then that'll tell you
what
we can do.
All right, possibility. And also we have... 7 measures already in my committee, and we are going to look at this also measure also in this, if not Friday, and beginning next week. So, with that, I want to thank you, Joe, Bill, and then Duncan, and appreciate deeply for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and God bless.
Thanks.